Hey, if I haven't told you already, Sergeant War Dog TV has an app. It's now out on both the Apple App Store as well as the Google Play Store. Download it today. Find directions to Camp Doghouse. Hear all of our podcasts. The entire Sergeant's playlist. View pictures and get directions straight to Camp Doghouse, all from the app. Download today, Sergeant War Dog, baby, on the War Dog Trail. Salute. Be sure to follow Sergeant War Dog TV on social media. You can find Sergeant War Dog TV on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, Vimeo, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Catch us online. Subscribe, like, and follow us. Salute.
Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Let's go to war, baby!
All I know is war, all I know is you, all I want is more. I'm a soldier, I'm a warrior, got a emblem on my cover, and ask me what I did for ya, I put the trash deep down under, yeah. I'm a dog of war, hell's what I've been through, I'm a dog of war, I did it all for you, yeah.
This is Sergeant War Dog. Welcome back to the War Dog Trail for episode 21. In this episode, I'm going to finish discussing my second tour in Iraq. After the initial battle of Fallujah, which was called Operation Vigilant Resolve. Now, we had a hellified time of scrapping between our hits on Fallujah, our hits on Al-Karma 2 days later, and then our hits on Numanaya, Iraq. And the time frame for all of this is April 11th or April 10th, 2004 to sometime in May. Just before Mother's Day, May of 2004. I specifically remember this because on Mother's Day, there was a changeover from the Marines to the Iraqis for the control of the city of Fallujah. And the conditions for that changeover now were that the general of the 1st Marine Division, General Mattis, Mad Dog, he had to be able to ride in his convoy, as I remember, from the center of the city of Fallujah, all the way to the mayor's complex, which was, a large, decent looking compound compared to the surrounding neighborhood and homes. Conditions were that he had to be able to ride through without being shot at once. So on Mother's Day, we stood by on the outsides of Fallujah, ready to assault again. Mother's Day 2004, the general rode through, made it all the way to the mayor's complex, wasn't shot at. So we turned control over to some guy who was a former Iraqi colonel in the Iraqi army during Saddam's rule, and who said that he had men that were loyal to him who could take control of the city of Fallujah and keep things safe and under wraps so the Marines wouldn't have to blow the motherfucker up. And that, in my eyes, is how Operation Vigilant Resolve ended, from my point of view, from the front row, as a grunt. That's how it ended, that's why it ended, that's, so from that point forward, all the grunt units that have been pulled in from remote areas or remote cities, like we were pulled out of Haditha. We received orders to return to those areas that we were in within the country of Iraq. So we returned to the city of Haditha at the 20-story hydroelectric dam that I told you about before. Now, once we got back to the dam, it was like returning to home, because, you know, home changes so much when you are in the military. Your sense of home and comfort and what is home, it changes dramatically. So in my case, I'm thinking that obviously home would have been hometown Orlando, Florida, but also home would have been my base in 29 Palms, California, Marine Base. Then again, home would have been, while being in Iraq, home was that 20-story hydroelectric dam that we had been initially assigned to, right? And I'm sorry, I'm going to back up one step before that. Home, to begin that deployment, was actually Okinawa, Japan, right? Home had been there for 2 months. So home relocated from there to Kuwait to back to Iraq to the Haditha Dam. And then from the Haditha Dam, like I said, being called out to Fallujah, Al-Karma, and New Minaya, all between April and May of 2004. Coming back to the dam, I got to do one of the coolest missions personally that I ever have been a part of. All right. Now, at the hydroelectric dam, that dam lay right along the Euphrates River, right? And you know, the river's so big and powerful that they had to have that dam there to slow down the flow of the water going into the city of Haditha, or obviously it'd flood the city. And the populace down there, the indigenous personnel. So there's an island not far from the dam that we received reports that some of our boats with Marines and during patrols there had received gunfire from. Some of our boats had received some type of gunfire from this island. So a 4-man sniper team and 2 additional heavy machine gunner and light machine gunner, being 6 men total, were going to be sent over to this island in a black rubber Zodiac rubber craft boat. Now, I was chosen as the light machine gunner to be a part of this mission. So it was the 4 snipers. You had me carrying the M249 saw, and then you had the had another Marine carrying an M240 Gulf, which fires, you know, the 7.62 belt-linked automatic fire. In addition to my own M249 saw being able to fire 5.56 linked automatic fire, right? And we were going to be the support for that 4-man sniper team. Now, we rode at 2 a.m., on the black rubber Zodiacs across the Euphrates River. And that ride took about 2 damn hours. So if you can picture the way the SEALs would ride on a Zodiac, laying across each other with their equipment inside the center, riding at night, silent, that's the kind of mission I'm telling you I was on. On real shit. On some true shit and G shit, you hear me? G shit being grunt shit, goddammit. This is on some true Sergeant War Dog shit that few can tell you about happening while in Iraq. Few can tell you that they were on boat missions and on boat ops while in the country of Iraq. But I'm going to give you that reel from the front seat. Because, yeah, the whole damn country's full of sand and desert, right? I'm telling you about boat ops going on with the snipers, Marine snipers, that I was a part of. Now, this is declassified and all now, obviously. No non-disclosure agreements concerning it. This op is trill. Real. 100. Now, around May 2004, We took that 2-hour ride out to this island. Like I said, 4 snipers, myself, and a 240 gunner. And obviously we had an operator for the Zodiac. Now, the Zodiac took on too much water. And we did have somewhat of a boat, a small boat company was attached to the Haditha Dam for, you know, obvious water patrols, right? Because we do have, you know, small boat companies, small gunboats, the whole nine, man, gunboats with 50 cals on them. We started to take on too much water on our Zodiac, riding through the Euphrates at 2 o'clock in the morning like that. So what we had to do was ride up close to the gunboat, jump onto the gunboat, all 6 of us, and then the driver, he took the Zodiac and he started to ride it around in circles and whip it, you know, whip it and whip it the way you would a car, because what he was trying to do was flick the water that was inside the center of the the rubber craft. He was trying to sip, trying to get that water out and trying to shake it and whip it out as best he could, which he was able to do after a few turns and a few runs. So he came back to us at the gunboat, and I remind you now, it's 2 a.m., we're freezing cold, wet, but we're on a mission, right? God damn it, we're on a true bona fide mission. 4 Marine snipers, myself, and a 240 gunner. Now, we hop back into the Zodiac, and then we proceed to the island. And the spot where you're going to arrive, once you're on a small rubber craft like that, or any kind of boat craft, the spot that we land, that we're going to touch ground, we call that the RLS, the River Landing Site. Now, once we approached our River Landing Site, we dismounted the Zodiac, you know, as silently, as fast as we could. And what I remember the most is we had to tie our weapons down and our weapons and gear down in the center of that Zodiac. Because obviously the way the men ride on the Zodiacs, we ride along the edges of it. And we kind of like leapfrog and lay across each other. And then we keep all of our gear in the center, our gear, our weapons. Now, what I remember the most is since our gear was tied down with 550 cord in the center of that Zodiac, I had to pull my knife and then think, you know, as well and as tactical as possible at 2 a.m. while standing in, you know, waist-deep water. Not knowing what the hell was in that Euphrates part of the water. And you know me being a Florida boy, I'm automatically thinking gators and crocs, right? Crocodiles. But, you know, that's just me thinking, you know, that as being a Florida boy and not knowing what the hell exactly was in that water in the Euphrates that we were standing in waist deep. But I was trying to cut my weapon free with that knife, and all I could think of is how precise I needed to cut so that I wouldn't puncture the motherfucking boat. I wouldn't puncture the rubber craft and in any way compromise the mission or the transportation for that Zodiac to get back with the formation and get back to the base where it needed to be. Because the operation was for them to drop us off, drop 6 of us off, only 6 of us on that island by ourselves at 2 a.m. in the morning, like I said, plus the 2-hour ride. So it was actually about 4 a.m. when we arrived. And we would have been there sooner, but I told you there was that delay where we took on too much water. We had to hop on the gunboat for a while, get water whipped out by doing 360s and donuts in the damn Zodiac with us waiting and then hopping back in and proceeding. When I was able to cut my weapon out, we immediately found some rundown, you know, huts or wooden clay type of buildings that the Iraqis had in a certain part of the island. And we set up our perimeter, you know, we set up a base, we set up communication, set up security, 360 degree security. I had my M249, as I said. So our primary jobs, it was the automatic weapons, myself and that M240 gunner. Lance Corporal Whittington. Our primary job is Marine rifleman or Marine automatic rifleman. Or I'm sorry, I was the Marine rifleman. He was an 0331 by trade, so Marine machine gunner. You had a Marine rifleman carrying an M249, which is it's still an automatic machine gun, a light machine gun, firing a smaller round. And then you had a natural 0331 machine gunner who was carrying the M240 Gulf, which was firing at 7.62 millimeter, also known in the civilian world as a 308 round, automatic, belt-linked, you know, full-fire, motherfucking, lay-down shit, let's roll, Marine type of shit, right? Now, as soon as we got on this island, we started to hear explosions, right? And with this being right after Fallujah, we weren't sure if this meant, you know, by then we were already combat heavy, because I told you we were combat experienced already from the first tour in Iraq. We were heavily combat wired and hyped from having hit Fallujah, then Al-Karma, then New Manaya just weeks before, after returning to the dam in Haditha. So to be on this island and to think we had contact, we were war ready like a motherfucker, if you know what I'm saying, right? So once we started to hear these explosions, just the six of us, we immediately started to call in that we were taking contact and that they had found us, you know, some type of way. The insurgents that had been firing at the boat patrols that came around that island in a certain part of the Euphrates River near the Haditha Dam. We took cover as we heard these explosions, only to find out that they were actually fishermen. They were just fishermen, right? And what these fishermen were doing was throwing TNT in the goddamn water and blowing the fish up and then riding over them with the net and catching them, right? Now, for the sake and love of fishing and being an angler, right? I don't know what kind of motherfucking fishing that was, dog. And I really can't explain that, but that's how they get down. That's what the Iraqis were doing that night at 4 in the morning while we pulled in and arrived on this operational river landing site that we needed to arrive on and secure as our base of operations. Now, a very crazy part of that night is that our waterproofing bags, our rubber bags, in which we also call Willie Peter bags, these are the bags that are supposed to be waterproof. That's what WP stands for, Willie Peter. They're supposed to be waterproof so that we could leave certain, you know, certain clothes, socks, whatever, inside of these and get those and keep those dry inside of our backpacks for the that we brought along for the mission. Now, because the Zodiac, the rubber craft, took on so much water, as I told you earlier, during that two-hour ride from the Haditha Dam itself to this island, the Willie Peter bag got completely immersed and submerged with water so that all of our shit was wet and cold. So here we are, 4 a.m., cold, wet, happy, on a mission. Just the six of us, knowing that we're there for observation, obviously, and to avoid contact, but if need be, to do what we had to do and carry out a mission and neutralize any threats. You dig? What else would you send snipers, riflemen, and machine gunners for? With just six of them, right? Holler at me, dog. Now, after we realized those fishermen were just blowing up the fish with the TNT and that we weren't actually taking contact from them, we reported that back to the Haditha Dam with our field pack radio. And for a few hours, we held in place. And from what I remember, being 20 years old at that time, just the six of us, I was chose as one of the first ones to rest while the other Marines took up fire watch and while the snipers planned their routes and planned, you know, their made their plans for where they would
like to potentially set up nests, set up hides, or patrol to. And because of the weapons that they carry are primarily, you know, for long-range shooting, they brought us in to, you know, for that close quarters battle type of shit. If we needed a weapon to enter a room and clear it, as opposed to using that with a 50 caliber sniper rifle, which obviously is hard to clear a room with, we were there to act as security so that no one would approach their sniper hides or their sniper nests, as well as, you know, to clear out any areas that they wanted to use as potential sniper hides or nests. So I rested during that evening. I mean, during that first part of the night, the first few hours, that was my job, was just to rest. So what I did was I laid out as much of my clothes as possible from my wet waterproofing bag, my Willie Peter bag, which is made of rubber. I laid out as much of my shit as possible across these wooden clay, the hut, you know, roofless, you know, just the remnants of whatever a building used to be at the edge of this island. I laid my shit out, let it dry, took a nap as I was ordered to, and then once I woke, you know, I changed into whatever I could that was less wet. Because like I said, with us already being wet, submerged, cold, freezing, one of those type of ops, this was, yes, around June of 2004. But, you know, at 2 a.m. or 4 a.m., you know, cold water, still cold water. So you're in one of those cold, wet missions with your weapons, gun tight, with just yourself, four snipers and a machine gunner, bro. And it's real shit. You even away from your platoon, you on that, you know, that real shit, homie. That exclusive shit that only a guy like me who's been on the front row could really tell you about. And what was happening during the war in Iraq. How many can tell you about operations that were going on water in Iraq, right? Yeah, hell yeah, the country's full of sand and that stuff we had there. But how many sniper missions have you ever heard about happening on Zodiacs that you usually only picture, you know, special ops, SEALs rolling on? And I'm telling you about just me and Marine Grunt, 0311, riding on with Marine snipers and another 0331. That's real shit. 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines, Kilo Company. Shout out, Lance Corporal Whittington. The 0331 that was with me. Now, eventually, I gathered my stuff, and as the sun began to rise, we realized we were dropped off at the wrong RLS. We were dropped off at the wrong place, basically. So, we proceeded to hike to the initial place that was our RLS, so we would know, you know, how we want to proceed in case of contact, potential landmine areas, you know, so forth. How we wanted to make our movements through, our tactical movements through this village, or through this island, I'm sorry. Now that, at one point, to get to where we needed to, I remember we again had to hop in the water, chest deep, and cross the parts of the Euphrates River. Just the six of us on that serious, silent movement through the water, you know, watching your splash, keeping your weapon above the water, holding it in your arms and above the water, both hands. And me, remember, I'm telling you, I'm carrying that M249, excuse me, which is about 25 inches long. I'm carrying that with a 200-round drum. It's about 25 pounds total for the whole gun plus the drum, 200-round drum. I'm carrying that through the water, through chest-deep water, silent, step by step, not knowing what's in the water, knowing that we were told never to piss in that water in the Euphrates River because there was some type of organism that would actually swim up your penis and seriously fuck you up. So I remember we were always ordered never to piss in that water. But here we are, moving through, just the six of us. And we hop out in formations in the tactical columns the same way we always would. And we're moving through, we're mobbing through areas, checking areas. And from what I remember, other than coming across a snake, and other than acquiring an old boat, which we used for a while, we did not take any contact there. We did not find anything. We did not. We did run across inhabitants there, some of the indigenous personnel, but they were all quiet, kind. oddly enough, I'm going to tell you about a time that we did halt, right? We did a long security halt where we could, change our boots. We had a chance to eat an MRE. I actually had to go number two pretty bad, so I grabbed an E-tool, let the snipers know where I was going. I dug a hole where I could. I obviously had my M249 near me, but I had privacy from the rest of those Marines so that, I could handle my business. And I did, then returned, used my hand sanitizer and such. And, straight mission survival, you know what I mean? Yeah, you still have to do number one and number two during the war, right? We gotta piss and shit, right? It's part of life. But there are tactical ways you have to do it, especially when you're moving with the sniper. So I did it. I used what I needed to do. I used that E-tool, E-tool is short for an entrenching tool, which is nothing more than a mini shovel. And I covered up what I did, including toilet paper and all, to leave no traces or context of the fact that I was there, that I'd done it, that my foot tracks were there. My gear was there. My presence was pretty much there. I left no trash, obviously, presence, because that's the way you move and operate during any and all covert and clandestine operations, especially while we're moving with the snipers, with Marine snipers especially. Even the fact, though, that we were in such a large team was outside of their norm, because they normally can operate with just a two-man team, a shooter and a spotter. So the fact that this was happening, like I said, all after Fallujah and all at this island outside of Aditha really made things real. Continue the rest of that night. We finished that time where I told you where I halted. I used the restroom. I got my chance to eat my MRE. And I remember, after arriving on the island around 4 a.m., we were picked up later around, 1700 hours, which is 5 p.m. We had some Zodiac platoon, my original infantry platoon, all came over in Zodiacs, and they picked us up and, herded us back with their entire platoon back to the Aditha Dam. And I'll never forget, I guess I was so tired after that op that I lay down on whatever bunk bed I was laying on, and I was on the top bunk. I laid on that top bunk, laid my head back, and while I was eating an MRE, I fell asleep with my spoon in my hand and just passed out, laid back, mouth open, just tired as hell from all of the strain of that entire op and what it took out of me, with the movement, with the boats, with the freezing, with the hearing the TNT from the fishermen. I didn't realize that it had drained so much out of me, but it really did. At this point, we're going to take a break before I continue with the conclusion of my second tour in Iraq. This is the War Dog Trail, episode 21. I'm going to take you now into the Sergeant's playlist.
Stay 10 toes down, she my baby now.
like to see your smile, I like to see her walk, right behind me, dog. Cause she my left dog and my right dog. We stand together, oh, and you know how this shit go. Yeah, she my ride and she gon' get those. Yeah, them 22s and with them clips, those. Yeah, she shootin' poppin', yeah, she shit, though. Yeah.
Okay, straight off the Sergeant's playlist, that was Marvo Been Lit with his song, remember, the Sergeant's playlist is nothing more than my own personal selection of certain lesser-known artists from all genres that I feel vibe with both this podcast and the Sergeant War Dog TV web series. Continuing on here in episode 21, to close out my second tour in Iraq, after I told you now about the boat op, the Zodiac op from the Haditha Dam, we returned to the dam to standard security infantry patrols in and around the city of Haditha. And I can't tell you how many missions or hundreds of miles I patrolled on foot, you know, wearing 80 to 100 pounds worth of gear and 110 plus temperatures every day. Some days reaching as high as 130, man. I'm going to tell you that after that boat op, I did end up in what I truly refer to as, I and the rest of my platoon that had to do this referred to as Operation Skin Cancer. All right. This is around June of 2004. There's a certain MSR, or main supply route, in Fallujah that most of our convoys used, or basically a road that all of our convoys needed to use to, you know, get to our base, to transport goods to our base. Now, some at one point an Iraqi had emplaced an IED and an improvised explosive device in the road. And the convoy that he hit, the Marine in that convoy, one Marine in that convoy happened to lose an eye. So I took it real personal because I actually later got to see the guy, meet him, and see him with his glass eye. I took it real personal during that time with that mission before I'd even known him that someone had the audacity, that a motherfucker had the audacity to put an IED that close to us, knowing that we had just come from Fallujah and all, and that we would get in that ass and we were ready to fuck anybody up that would come with that type of bullshit. So on the real, we were sent on a straight up surveillance op where we were spaced out in the desert, hidden in little dug in spots with our desert tarps. We were hidden hundreds of yards away from the roads, but close enough that we could still, one, observe with binoculars, or second, we were within the maximum effective range of our weapons so that, you know, we, no matter how far we were still close enough that we could shoot motherfuckers on point and try to catch whoever was burying these IEDs in the grounds and trying to blow up Marines along these, or along this MSR, this main supply route, or which is basically known as, you know, a road in civilian terms. Now we ended up spending, this is, you know, like a cat and mouse game. We're trying to wait all day, all night, and we're sleeping in these tents. I'm sorry, not in these tents. We're sleeping in these little dug in areas, and up to 110, up to 130 degree temperatures, man. It's just us and 3-4 man teams in these little, dug in tents. We have, like maybe backpacks, our weapons, ammo, MREs, we have water. At one point, there was something we were doing that, because it was so hot, there was a way that we could cool off our drinks, cool off our water. And it was a godsend to be able to have anything like Kool-Aid or Gatorade or Tang, you know, some kind of powdered flavored drink that you could mix with that hot water. But what we would do, since it was so hot there in the desert in those spots, which we had to live in all day, all night, 24/7, the entire op took 30 days straight. We would take off our socks, wet the socks, completely submerge them, wrap them around the, wrap the wet sock around the water bottle, and then try to tuck that water bottle under as much shade as possible, be that a helmet or be that, you know, any piece of shade you could find under the desert tarp we were using to blend in and camouflage ourselves in the desert so that we could observe these IED placers and catch them on point and kill their asses straight up. The issue also living like that, though, was that when I mentioned shady spots, you know, be that under a helmet or in a man's boots, we had to compete with living with camel spiders. And if you don't know, Iraqi desert camel spiders are as big as your motherfucking hand, bro. So, you had to always, you know, check your gear, check anything in a shady spot to, and shake your gear out to avoid having camel spiders inside your gear. Unfortunately, I did have one buddy who ended up being a bit on the chest. He had a bit of a large red, you know, bump and bruise on his chest from that, but our medics were able to, you know, get him out of the desert and taken care of, and he was able to eventually bounce back. But, yeah, fuck with those camel spiders ain't cool, man. I mean, it's funny, it's cool to laugh at, but when you're living out there 20, 30 days out there with them, living there, pissing around there, shitting around there, eating around there, observing around there, waiting, you know, observing, surveilling, those motherfuckers can get on your nerves, become pesky, nuisance to have to, you know, compete with on top of your mission that you're already focused on. So, Operation Skin Cancer, man, I'm sad to say later on I did find out one of the Marines I served with did actually contract skin cancer. And we were calling it that because we were out there, you know, and at that time it was so hot, I stripped down to nothing but my skivvy shorts, you know, with damn near my boxers and boots. And I was out there screaming. I had lost my mind like a Yeti. I was screaming, yeah, 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 yeah. I had lost my mind and lost my shit from being in the heat and been just frying on mine like that for 30 days, man. Being in the desert waiting and observing. And long story short, we did eventually find that run into that IED in place about a month after those 30 days, maybe another 2 to 3 weeks later. We had a unit that a unit of snipers, I believe, that did end up catching him and killing him while he was trying to place more IEDs, which, like I said, we took personal because a Marine from our unit ended up losing an eye after that bomb that he emplaced in the road exploded. A guy that I did get the chance to meet later and see him with that glass eye, who was still able to physically function in every way, just had that glass eye and still had that heart of a Marine to want to teach and train and get back into the scrap, get back into the fight. And he did, man, so hats off to him. That's just the way Marines are built. That's all I can say to that. Or if not just Marines, just certain veterans, you know what I mean? Some of veterans are just, or some whatever people, athletes, they just built resilient. You know what I mean? They can withstand a lot, and he did. We eventually returned to the States, say around August of 2004. And during that time, I actually had the amazing idea of going with the gentleman that I had interviewed here in episode 20, Corporal Antonio Styles, another former U.S. Marine rifleman, 0311, who not only did 3 tours in Iraq with me, but also ended up doing a tour in Afghanistan. He and I decided to drive from, you know, because by this time, you know, we'd already taken 2 36-hour flights to get from our base in California to get to Iraq. So we were tired of all the flights and the transfers and waiting in Germany and waiting in Kuwait and so on and so forth. So we decided to get back to our homes in Florida for myself and Georgia for him, making Georgia for him and Orlando, Florida for myself. We decided to, you know, drive, take a cross country trip in my 2002 Dodge Stratus that I happened to have at the time. And like I said, we drove from 29 Palms, California, you know, headed through every state that the I-40 takes you across. And I remember we once spent the night in the Grand Canyon, near the Grand Canyon, in a hotel there. Then we spent the night once near a Navajo community further along the I-40. I remember spending the night in Memphis, and for right now, that's all I can remember. And each time I would drop off my buddy in Macon, Georgia, so he could see his family, go on leave, I would head down to Orlando, see my family. He'd go to Macon, Georgia, and then I would go to Atlanta, Georgia, to visit with my family there, and then I'd make my way down to Orlando. Then at the end of the 30-day leave that we had, we reversed it, and I picked him up from Orlando into Macon, Georgia, and we took it back west all the way to Cali again, and got back to our Marine base in time to jump back into training again. Now, oddly enough, after being home in the States and having already gone through 2 tours in Iraq, turning 19 and 20 during this war, having been the unit that made it to Baghdad first and pulled down Saddam's statue, and having gone through being, you know, part of the very first assault on Fallujah, around September and October of 2004, we were again training, preparing to return to Iraq, because for us, we didn't have the same timetables that the Army had where they were dictated to go, you know, a certain amount of 12 months or 15 month periods, or I'm not sure exactly what the some of the reserve units were doing once they were activated. I only can tell you what the active duty infantry Marines were going through during that period of 2002 to say 2006 or 7, when my three tours took place. Now, in November of 2004 was when the major battle of Fallujah took place. So we were home in the States training, but, you know, intensely watching that and seeing what was going on, obviously, with the Marine units that were scrapping in there and that were taking it to the enemy and that were really kicking ass and killing motherfuckers, you know, getting down and taking care of business like we like to as Marines and as infantry Marines especially. And as anyone else from any other part of the U.S. military that was a part of, you know, straight up handling business and getting through their missions, man, and whooping ass, because that's what we do as the U.S. military, baby. We do it the best in the world, goddammit. Now, yeah, after the major battle of Fallujah was going on, around December, that following December, after the battle took place in November, the next month in December, we thought we were just going to go home for Christmas and then, you know, return to Twin Palms, California. We were going to take our leave and I was going to head back to Orlando. However, plans got halted immediately when we were told just short of us leaving to go home for Christmas that we were receiving orders to return to Iraq for our third motherfucking tour. That we were going to receive orders to head straight back to Fallujah. After being home for just barely 6 months, arriving home around August, and being ordered to leave in January, around August of 04, and being ordered to leave in January of 2005, we received that news that we were going to be ordered for our third tour in Iraq. That's going to end this episode of The War Dog Trail, episode 21. Where I concluded my second tour in Iraq. All right, to conclude this episode, I'm gonna finish you off with another hit from the Sergeant's playlist. Salute.
It's about 10 o'clock, so you've put back a few. I'm not here to judge or hold it against you. In fact, so you're good and fucked up. I've seen you out enough to figure out what's up. It's the 15th round. You're dancing upside down with your hands on the table, singing way too loud. But where's my drunk text? Like, hey baby, let's have sex. Like, are you naked? Well, can you be? Cause you're not as faded.
Instagram story, but no text at all. We're in the name of God. In my beauty come, gonna throw my phone against the wall. Oh shit, you called.
All right, that was Madeline Rosine with her song Drunk Text. You can find Madeline Rosine on Instagram at Madeline Rosine. That's spelled at MadelineRosene. Also, you can find Madeline on Twitter under the same handle at Madeline Rosine. Signing off, this is Sergeant War Dog. This has been episode 21 of the War Dog Trail. Hey, be sure to download our app from the Apple App Store or Google Play, as well as follow us on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Vimeo, TikTok, and SergeantWarDogTV.com. Be sure to download our app, follow us on social media. Sergeant War Dog signing out. Salute. War Dog Trail, baby.
Steve Jeans, that's what it is.
All I know is war. All I know is shoot. All I want is more. But I got some things to do. I'm a dog of war. Hell's what I've been through. I'm a dog of war. I did it all for you.
DDB Radio.